Everybody, and welcome into a very special live edition of the Nesson Patriots podcast. I'm Zach Cox, joined as always by Dakota Randall. We are in beautiful Indianapolis in the Indiana Convention Center for the NFL Scouting Combine. We're about halfway through Combine Week. The player drills, the most visible part of the Combine just started up today, but it's been a very busy week already. Out here in Indy, we've heard from several coaches, heard from general managers, heard from a great deal of draft prospects, and we're going to get into all of that in this show. But I think a good place to start is with somebody who is not here, but typically is, and that's Bill Belichick. Typically, Bill Belichick does travel out here to Indianapolis for the Combine, which has always been really probably the marquee event in the pre-draft process. But this year, decided to stay back home, back in New England. The Patriots only sent a select group of assistant coaches here to Indy, along with some members of their personnel staff. But it has been a big storyline that Bill Belichick isn't here. Just what's your reaction to Bill not being here? Is it a big deal? Is it no deal? What's your take on it?
Well, it's interesting. I think, first of all, there was kind of mixed signals on it. We weren't really sure. The storyline first kind of popped up on Wednesday, and there was some back and forth about it. And then this morning, there was kind of a report that indicated he might still come later in the week, and then it kind of got locked back, and then it was going to be that he's not coming. The Patriots eventually confirmed to both of us that he is not expected to come this week, so barring a surprise appearance, it does indeed seem like he's not going to come. I think you could go either way on it. You know, I think on the one hand, I think it's kind of an easy sort of talk radio take to say, Patriots, they've missed the playoffs the last few years, or this year and then the year before that. In that they're kind of mired in mediocrity. They have so many holes on the roster. They have so many things they need to do to get back to being the Patriots that we're used to. At the bare minimum, it seems like coming to the combine, getting a look at the prospects, you know, having those connections with other coaches and executives would be a good idea. You know, and I get that. But on the other hand, you know, I think you can make the case that the combine is really more about sort of fraternizing between coaches, executives, agents, all that kind of stuff that Bill Belichick at 70 years old, I don't know if he really needs to do that kind of stuff anymore. He can get anybody on the line whenever he wants. He's Bill Belichick. Everybody knows who he is. You know, yes, on the one hand, this can be a place where you sort of lay the foundation to start trades, talk with agents ahead of free agency, and yeah, all that can be important. But you can also do a lot of that stuff on your phone, on Zoom calls these days. So I don't really think it's that big a deal. He's probably still going to go to pro days, still do private workouts, probably has a good idea of the players that he's interested in. And then I also think, you know, the fact that he sent Joe Judge is here, Troy Browner here is here. You know, those are the guys who are probably going to be doing some of these interviews with some of the prospects. And say what you want about Joe Judge as a coach. And I think Belichick respects his personality, his, you know, he's kind of like, you know, a hardo, so to speak. You know, you can see that he'd bring a similar demeanor to some of those interviews that Belichick would. So in a certain way, I think some of the same questions might be asked that Belichick would ask if he's here. Troy Brown kind of brings some of that too. So I get that it's a big storyline. I think you could make a case that, at the very least, what would it hurt to come? But I think it's overblown.
Yeah, it has been kind of a league-wide trend in the last couple of years to sort of de-emphasize the combine, I guess. Sean McVay and his Rams staff haven't come at all in the last 2 years. There are no Rams coaches here in Indy that we know of. I believe also the Green Bay Packers, I think it was, also didn't send their staff out here this year. Every team probably has some sort of presence, be it a scout or a personnel guy, because there is still value to it. But it's not the kind of end-all, be-all of scouting that I think a lot of people viewed it as for a long time, just given the profile of the event. And I also think it's worth noting and important that the Patriots did get such a close look at a great deal of these draft prospects when they were at the Shrine Bowl out in Las Vegas last month. I've heard this week that they really viewed that as a very valuable kind of scouting tool. They thought they really were able to get a lot out of it, both because they're with these kids nonstop for a week, essentially. They get to kind of put them through all the drills and whatnot. But something that actually hadn't registered for me about why doing that is so valuable is when you're at the Senior Bowl or when you're at most pro days or whatnot, you're watching a prospect go through drills, but you're not watching a prospect typically go through your drills and practicing exactly what you want to do.
Right.
The Patriots were able to really tailor that entire Shrine Bowl week do exactly what they want to do. They can say, all right, well, we want these wide receivers. We want to know XYZ about a receiver. We're going to put them through these exact drills. That's going to kind of accentuate that and show that. So I think that was a very beneficial experience for them. Now, you could say, on the other hand, a lot of the Shrine Bowl prospects aren't the guys that are going to be probably going in the first round. It's long been viewed as the kind of secondary pre-draft all-star game behind the Senior Bowl. I know that is shifting in recent years. It is becoming more prominent. You do have some higher profile players like Zay Flowers was there this year. And I think it's rising in that level. But most of the players that you're probably going to hear called in the first round in April, we're not at that Shrine Bowl. So that's definitely something that maybe like a nitpick, I could say, for people who are saying, hey, yeah, it's important, but these are mostly guys that are going to go fourth, fifth round, maybe even later.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, too, you know, I talked to a couple of players yesterday who met with the Patriots at the Senior Bowl. And again, like you said, that's not them running through their drills, but they still met with players. They still got to know them. And, you know, they're going to have meetings with a lot of players at pro days or private workouts. So again, you know, a lot of the stuff that they would accomplish here at the combine, they're going to accomplish the same things in other ways, either before or after the combine. I forget who wrote it, but I did read something today where an executive said that one of the more, perhaps the most beneficial part of being here in terms of player evaluation is purely medical.
Yep.
You know, getting a look at guys' medicals, having your people look at them, that kind of stuff. And again, those are things you can accomplish at pro days or in your private workouts. So, you know, it would have been cool selfishly. I would have loved for Bill Belichick to be here and speak, just to have a press conference. We haven't really talked to him since Bill O'Brien got hired, stuff like that. Matt Groh, also the director of play personnel, didn't speak. You know, that would have been nice. We talked to some other GMs. So that all would have been great, but I agree with you. At the end of the day, it's not a huge deal, but you could nitpick it for sure.
And even in the years where Bill Belichick and his whole staff are here, they typically don't talk, which is very frustrating for us. They're one of the only teams that doesn't hold one of these combine press conferences. But in those combine press conferences, we did get some interesting information about some other members or potential members of the Patriots coaching staff. We had a lot of praise for Bill O'Brien, a lot of praise for Adrian Clem, two new additions to the Patriots staff. But probably the most interesting was about the future of Matt Patricia, who interviewed for the defensive coordinator job in Denver, didn't end up getting that job. But Broncos head coach Sean Payton said this week that he's still considering hiring Patricia for a different role on his staff. I believe it was Ian Rappaport who reported it could look like something like a senior defensive assistant or an assistant head coach, associate head coach, something along those lines. But it does sound like there is still a chance that Patricia will land in Denver. And it also sounds like there's still a chance that he'll end up sticking around the Patriots in some sort of front office type role, even though some reports have indicated that that's probably unlikely. So I think that's the biggest remaining domino for the Patriots from a coaching perspective is, where is Matt Patricia going to land? Some more minor ones, like what's Joe Judge's role on the team? Again, as you mentioned, he is here in Indianapolis. But I think the Patricia question is the biggest, just with how much of a spotlight was on him this season.
Yeah, for the second consecutive offseason, we're still talking about Matt Patricia and what he's going to do next season. It's been fascinating because it's been all over the place, really, since the start of the offseason. At the beginning, there was talk that, you know, maybe he would still come back in some capacity, whether that be just as the offensive line coach or going up into the front office role. And then there were reports that he's probably going to move on, just get away from the Patriots for a year. Maybe it's best to get a fresh start somewhere else. And then we heard this week, like you said, about the Broncos, that he might go work there. And then Ben Volen on the Boston Globe yesterday had a report where I think he spoke to a friend of Patricia's that said there's still a path for him to stay here in some capacity, given his roots in New England, his family, you know, that they like being New England, so that could happen. I forget who it was, but someone, I think Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston, said that Patricia doesn't want to do a front office role. He wants to keep coaching. There doesn't seem to be an opening for him on the Patriots coaching staff on either side of the ball, so I have no idea what's going to happen to him at this point. I'd be surprised if, given all that Sean Payton said the other day, that he didn't land with the Broncos. Like, there was a lot said in that press conference, then for Rappaport to come out right after that and float those two specific job titles, that seems to indicate that the ball is moving in that direction. But then a day later, we got a report that he might still go back to the Patriots. So I don't know what to believe at this point.
Yeah, and we haven't really, it'll probably still be a couple months before we get any official confirmation from the Patriots
about any
about any coaching changes beyond the Bill O'Brien hiring, which is the only one that the team has announced. They still haven't officially announced Adrian Clem. They haven't announced Will Lawing. There was a report today that they're going to have a new member of their scouting staff with Pat Stewart, who's a former Patriot scout, coming back to New England. It typically isn't until May or so that they release their full coaching staff. So probably still going to be a little while before we get actual confirmation on what it's going to look like. But it does seem to be mostly in place, just with that Patricia question still lingering there.
Just a quick question. Do you think Bill O'Brien should have been here? I guess I hadn't really thought about it until now that you'd think, you know, they sent the coaches over here. Joe Judge is here. Kane Acord's here. I think Joe Houston, Troy Brown.
Mike Pellegrino.
Yeah. And so, you know, on the one hand, you know, Gerard Mayo and Steve Belichick, the co-defensive coordinators, essentially aren't here. So it's not like there's a precedent, like they have to have the offensive coordinator. But Bill O'Brien coming back, like, it would have been interesting if he came and was involved in some of those meetings.
Yeah, I'm not sure, and I'd be interested to learn how they decided on that group of coaches that came, because it seems kind of like a hodgepodge selection. I guess you got two guys on special teams, one guy on offense, one guy on defense, and then whatever Joe Judge is doing now.
You got three of the most maligned coaches of the season. You have Joe Judge, who obviously had a tough season and who we still don't really know what he's going to do. And then you have Kane Acord and Joe Houston, who were in charge of special teams, which in some respects was the worst special teams unit in the NFL. And we kind of entered the offseason thinking there was going to be major turnover there. Now it doesn't look like it. But so, yeah, kind of an interesting, unexpected group of coaches that came here.
Yeah, and the fact that the Patriots do have such a heavy special teams presence here makes you wonder whether what that specialist group is going to look like next year, whether there's going to be a new punter, a new long snapper, a new kicker. But obviously those are pretty low-level off-season questions. But with that coach talk out of the way, we should probably move on and talk about the prospects who are actually here at the NFL Combine. Again, we have had a chance to speak with a good amount of them. Not yet all of them. We won't hear from the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the tight ends until tomorrow. Won't hear from the offensive linemen until Saturday, but we've talked to defensive linemen, we've talked to linebackers, and earlier today, we talked to cornerbacks and safeties. Overall, from the handful of guys we've gotten to speak with, what's just one of your overall takeaways from this group here?
Well, for me, this is my first time actually coming to the Combine and kind of really getting up close and personal with a lot of college players. And so one thing that's been interesting for me is there are some guys that you talk to and then also sort of look up their backgrounds and what they did in college, and then you immediately think that's a Patriots.
Yep.
And I think for both of us, one of those players is Isaiah Moore, who's a linebacker out of NC State, who's at the Shrine Bowl. Their reports of the Patriots were really impressed with him throughout that week. And then he comes here, and you kind of find out why. He was a three-time captain in college, close friend of Jacoby Myers while they were together at NC State, and just really well-spoken. I believe he wore the green dot and called the defense out there, compared himself to Juwan Bentley, said Bentley's a great linebacker, sees a lot of similarities there. The Patriots love Juwan Bentley. They need a linebacker. He also projects as like a fifth, sixth, seventh round pick. So just checks a ton of Patriots boxes.
Yeah,
there's a lot of guys like that you talk to and you're like, I can see the Patriots.
Absolutely, yeah. The Patriots reportedly couldn't stop raving about Isaiah Moore when they were out there at the Shrine Bowl. A lot of comparisons, like you said, to Juwan Bentley, who was also a three-time college captain, would not be at all surprised if this is a situation.
Which is not what I think the Patriots need. I don't think they need another Juwan Bentley. I think a more athletic linebacker, but that's a different rabbit hole. But I'm not sitting here saying they should be targeting these kind of players.
It seems like a classic Patriots thing. Like, right. Going into that 2018 draft, I don't think any of us had really even heard of Juwan Bentley. He was not projected as a player who was going to be drafted. Patriots end up taking him in the fifth round. We all have to kind of scramble to figure out who this guy is. And then you say, oh, he's a three-time captain. Makes a lot of sense. But there were some connections to some players who are going to be drafted much earlier in this draft. The Patriots met with a handful of the top edge rushers in this draft, guys who could be available in that range of number 14 where the Patriots are scheduled to pick. They met with at least two of the top cornerback prospects and Joey Porter Jr. and Christian Gonzalez. We didn't hear from Devin Witherspoon, the other guy in that top three today, so we're not sure if he's met with the Patriots or not.
Probably. They're meeting with just about everybody.
Yeah. And an important thing to keep in mind for everyone, I feel like this is a good point that everybody needs to remember during draft season. The Patriots are going to meet with like 300 people before the draft.
Right.
And just because the Patriots had a meeting with a player or an interview or even an official visit doesn't even necessarily mean they're planning on drafting that player. It could be for future considerations. It could be because they want to learn something about one of his teammates. There are so many different kind of avenues that could take. So just important to keep in mind when you're looking at Twitter and you see Patriots met with so-and-so, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're planning to draft him. But I could see them going cornerback in the first round.
Yep.
Again, we're not going to talk to the offensive tackles until later in the week, but certainly could see them targeting one of them at that spot. Some people want them to draft a receiver in the first round. I don't think that's a route that I would take. But I also wouldn't be surprised if, even though edge rusher, linebacker, defensive line don't really look like dire needs on this Patriots team, it wouldn't shock me at all if the Patriots drafted Lucas Van Ness or Miles Murphy or Tyree Wilson or one of these kind of standout edge type guys. Met with all of those guys. And if you look overall at the Patriots' history of first round draft picks, the group or groups that they really have the highest hit rate on are those defensive linemen, those linebackers, those front seven defenders. There just seems to be much less volatility with those kind of players, and they just seem to be better at identifying that kind of talent in the first round.
Yeah, and another name that I'm starting to wonder about is Jalen Davis. Jalen Carter.
Yes.
Jalen Davis. Who's some people believe is the best overall prospect in this draft. Yeah. Kind of a wild scene here yesterday where he was supposed to speak in about 15 minutes at the podium. And then it came out that there was a warrant issued for his arrest for a situation stemming from, I believe it was a fatal car crash in Georgia. Kind of a long story there. But you wonder, does that make him slide down the board? I don't know if it would make him slide all the way to 14th. I guess we'll have to see how the situation plays out. You never know what kind of details are going to come out of that. Do I think defensive tackle is a top need for the Patriots? Not necessarily. It depends on what you think Christian Barmore can be, if he's ready to become an every down lineman for the Patriots and replace Lawrence Guy, who's kind of getting older. Depends on what you think of someone like Dietrich Wise or Devon Godchow in the middle. But, you know, if a player like that is there, slipping maybe down towards 10, you can trade up. Or if he falls to 14, that's just an interesting player to keep an eye on. He might be the best player in the draft.
Yeah, Carter flew home, didn't talk to the media yesterday, but he is back in Indianapolis. I don't know if he's actually going to do drills today, but he is in kind of with the rest of the defensive linemen. And he's going to be a fascinating case leading up to this draft. And we've seen in recent years, they're kind of super high caliber prospects who have had some of these kind of off-field concerns, whatever they may be, they slide. There's the Laramie Tunsil a couple of years ago, slid to the 20s. There was Lyle Collins, who I believe went undrafted. It's certainly going to be a lot of teams kind of scrambling to get a read on what they can expect from Carter and whether how this situation could potentially impact
it. Yeah, and I think it's also just interesting because this isn't a situation the Patriots typically are in when you're talking about, you know, every time we come up to a draft, there are, you know, some high-end prospects who you're talking about top 10, top 5, and they slip for one reason or the other. Maybe it's not huge reasons, it just fits with the teams that are drafting, and maybe they're projected to go 5, 6, 7, and they slip down to 13, 14, 15. That used to not matter to the Patriots because they're picking around 28, 30, 31, but now they're picking 14th. So if there's, you know, they might go into the draft with one player in mind that they'd like to get at 14 or a couple of players, but maybe someone who they view as, you know, the best player on the board slips down to their spot at 14th overall, a spot they're not used to being in, and they can get someone like that. Maybe that's someone like Witherspoon, who some think is the best cornerback in the draft, but maybe Christian Gonzalez goes ahead of him or Joey Porter goes ahead of him and Witherspoon slips down. So just a lot of stuff that's in play that we're not used to talking about with the Patriots.
Yeah, this is the highest the Patriots have drafted, or obviously there's still a chance that they could trade that pick given the Patriots. I would say that's probably a pretty high chance, but this is, yeah, if they stay at number 14 and make that pick, it would be the highest that they've drafted since they got Jerod Mayo way back in 2008. And that pick came from a trade. It's their highest own pick. It's the highest their own pick has been in a draft since, I believe, 2001. I want to say, I think it was right after Belichick's first season. So yeah, it goes to show that this is a situation that the Patriots typically aren't in. They were drafting 15 a couple of years ago when they got Mac Jones, so that was a similar case. But yeah, it's different than a lot of the Patriots drafts that I think fans have been used to over the years, where you say, all right, well, yeah, they've got pick 28, and the caliber of player from number 14 to number 28 can be pretty significant. It can be a pretty significant gap, and the Patriots could end up with a player that in years past would have just been completely untouchable for them. So yeah, going to be very interesting to see. Obviously a long ways to go before the draft, and their needs are going to shift depending on what they do in free agency. But I think it adds a lot more intrigue to this draft when you have a chance to get one of those really kind of blue chip type guys.
Yeah, definitely. And I also think maybe this is kind of a good time to bring up, you know, we just sort of downplayed the importance of meetings. Mm. Talking about where the Patriots could go with 14th overall and all these kind of things. Like, there was a very interesting meeting that they did have with a player, with a quarterback, actually.
Yes, this was Anthony Richardson, Florida quarterback, projected top 10 pick. There's even been some rumblings that he could be a dark horse number one overall candidate. I think his odds are fourth best on DraftKings for that. He reportedly met with the Patriots this week in Indianapolis. Again, the whole spiel I just gave you a couple minutes ago, just because the Patriots meet with a player doesn't necessarily mean they are considering drafting that player. And it seems with Richardson, obviously, depending on where how his stock fluctuates over the next couple months, probably as a player they would even have to trade up to get. But the fact that they are even kind of wasting their time, quote unquote, talking to a player of that caliber and a quarterback of that caliber, it's at the very least interesting and notable, because I think quarterback is one of the few positions, probably quarterback, like center or guard, are the only positions that would be a complete shock if the Patriots drafted one in the first round. You can make the case for pretty much everything else on the roster. But yeah, if they, I mean, it would create some chaos. But I don't think that they are planning on drafting a quarterback. But yeah, again, still interesting that a guy that they even took the time to meet with that guy, you know?
Yeah, and I do think there is some merit to drafting a quarterback in this draft, potentially. I mean, you know, you have someone like Bailey Zappe now who you're confident in as a backup. And the Patriots in the past have sort of taken chances, maybe in the middle rounds, on toolsy quarterbacks, you know, raw quarterbacks who, you know, kind of like a lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Richardson is a lottery ticket. I mean, he's considered raw with a ton of athleticism on these guys. So if it all clicks, he could be an absolute superstar, or could go the other way.
It's like, yeah, the accuracy is rough. The decision-making is rough. The mechanics, but he's got, the arm strength, the physical talent, the rushing abilities, basically been compared to a raw Cam Newton type.
So take a chance maybe on somebody like that and, you know, sit him for a couple years, have him learn, and then maybe in a couple years he turns into one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I do think there's merit to kind of taking that approach all the time, because you can't ever have too many quarterbacks. I mean, it's the most important position, you know, until you are absolutely 100% sure that you have the franchise quarterback. And I don't know how the Patriots can make that call at this point. I mean, I'm, you know, a believer in Mac Jones, but after this year, you can't know. And so until you are absolutely sure, you know, keep getting those tickets, keep getting those scratch tickets, and see if you can get, you know,
even when you are absolutely sure. I mean, the Patriots, even during the peak of Tom Brady, not even talking about the Jimmy Garoppolo times when they thought that Brady might be kind of on the verge of declining. You go back to 2006, 2007, 2008, they're using a third round pick on someone like Kevin O'Connell. Even when that guy has no earthly chance of beating out Tom Brady, unless Brady gets devastatingly injured, they still had that strategy back then. So yeah, it would not at all surprise me if the Patriots did take a chance on a developmental quarterback in this draft. I just don't think they're going to do that in round one. So yeah, going to be interesting to see where someone like Richardson lands in this draft. Because as you mentioned, he's a guy who has the potential to be the best player in the draft, or a guy who's kind of out of the league in a couple of years. So
yeah.
Anything else Patriots prospect meeting related?
No, I mean, I do think it was, and we kind of beat this story into death this week because it was right there, the Shrine Bowl stuff. But I do think it was interesting talking to a lot of the players who were coached up by the Patriots at the Shrine Bowl. You know, a lot of these guys, I think, had interesting stories. One today, I think it was Miles Brooks, who was a cornerback. I might have that wrong, but either way, they all started playing together. One of them said that Bill Belichick was far nicer than he was expecting, maybe just because they're college kids. He was being nicer, but he expected one Belichick and got another. Multiple guys told these stories about Belichick at the Shrine Bowl running a punt drill. Punt drill didn't go the way that he liked it, and then he put an abrupt stop to practice. They had a bunch of other stuff they were supposed to do. All that went to the wayside because Belichick said, no, we're doing punt drills now. We're doing special teams. A lot of that kind of stuff that was, you know, I think interesting. And just generally, everybody we talked to raved about the Patriots coaches, said, you know, they had really direct, hands-on coaching that a lot of these players weren't used to in college, that it's not the same kind of style, and that they really liked what the Patriots coaches did out there.
Yeah, one of the big kind of prevailing themes from talking to those Shrine Bowl players was just how seriously the Patriots took that week, which I guess shouldn't be surprising given they're a team that's coached by Bill Belichick. But this wasn't a case where they said, all right, yeah, we'll go hang out in Vegas for a week, we'll give these guys a hand, then we'll just kind of go to the bar at night. Like, this was a very, very dialed in, very serious week for the Patriots coaches, which I'm curious if they knew back then saying, all right, we're not going to go, we're barely going to have a presence at the combine. This is going to be kind of our primary scouting ground. Let's really take this seriously and let's really see what we can get out of it for these kids and for the coaches themselves, which would make it not at all surprising if Patriots end up drafting like 6 Shrine Bowl guys in the draft this year. They already drafted 4 of them last year. They love senior bowl guys in the past. So yeah, definitely important to know the names of the guys who played for the Patriots in that game, because you can pretty much guarantee that at least one or two of them are going to end up drafted.
Yeah, and I think one other note on interviews with players, I thought some Alabama players had interesting comments about Mac Jones. Mm-hmm. Will Anderson yesterday, you asked
really
a question about Mac Jones, and he told a really good story about just kind of about Mac's leadership at Alabama, about something like Mac had a bloody nose.
They were doing an off-season, it's called the fourth quarter program, apparently. It's kind of the Alabama's off-season training program. And there was a famous picture of Mac Jones, which I actually forgot about until Mark Daniels, our buddy from Mass Live, sent it to me, of Mac with just a bloody nose and a completely bloody shirt running sprints. And Will Anderson remembered that moment, and he said he was like kind of looking over me. The hell is this guy doing?
Yeah, really lit up.
Yeah, and then Jones walked over to Anderson, who was a really highly touted incoming freshman at the time, and he said, "Hey, basically, we know you're a 4-star, we know you're a 5-star. Stars don't matter here. Like, you got to earn everything you get." And this was a guy who had started like 2 college games at that point, because Mac Jones wasn't Alabama starter until his senior year. So that still resonated with Anderson. That's the first thing he mentioned, kind of top of his head, when he was asked about Mac Jones and several of his other teammates as well. Clearly still have kind of fond memories and a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, that was cool. Jordan Battle said that Mac Jones is the best trash talker that he's ever gone up against, which was interesting. He also said Christian Barmore was someone who he went in the locker room and knew not to mess with him, which checks out. Kind of an intimidating dude. So yeah, a lot of interesting stuff from the Alabama prospects too. And given the Patriots-Alabama connection, wouldn't be a surprise if a couple of them. I think Jordan Battle is an interesting one, as someone who could project as a free safety, supposedly going to be available early second round. We don't know what's going to happen with Devin McCourty this offseason, if he's going to retire. Maybe seems to be momentum building towards the other direction if you're reading the tea leaves, but who really knows? But maybe
they, and even if he doesn't, you probably got to get that replacement in here.
Yeah, either way, I think they have to get a free safety, either in the draft or free agency, whatever it might be.
So branching over a little bit to some kind of veteran offseason questions, I think one of the biggest storylines of this Patriots offseason as they head toward free agency is what are they going to do at wide receiver? And I think that's a question around the league, because coming into Combine Week, it seemed like there was a chance at least that 3, 4, 5 real kind of big name, high caliber, number one type wideouts could potentially be traded in the next couple of weeks. There's still a chance that some of those guys might be moved, but a couple of the bigger names on that list, I think you can pretty much cross them off at the moment, unless their team gets bowled over by an offer. T. Higgins from the Cincinnati Bengals, Keenan Allen from the Los Angeles Chargers. Both of their general managers spoke earlier this week and basically said, hell no, we're not going to trade either of these guys. Now, it wouldn't be the first time that a GM has said that and then proceeded to trade that player a couple days or weeks later, but it seems a lot less likely now. That didn't really seem like posturing from both of them, and I think it would be pretty surprising at this point if either Higgins or Allen was moved, but there are still some other potential guys on that list. DeAndre Hopkins, we spoke with Monty Austinfort, the Cardinals' new general manager. He said, I'm happy to have DeAndre Hopkins on the team, but certainly left open the possibility that he could be moved. So maybe he's potentially a Patriots target. There's obviously the Bill O'Brien angle with that, which could complicate things. And then you're also looking at guys like Brandon Cooks, maybe Jerry Jeudy. Still some names on that list, but it was an interesting development that two of the bigger ones are basically pretty much off the board right now, except unless they get bowled over by an offer.
Yeah, we came into this week thinking, are we going to get some interesting Patriots receiving news while we're out here? And so far, the only Patriots receiving news so far is about Slade Bolden.
I forgot about Slade Bolden.
Yeah, it was only a couple of days ago, but yeah, I don't even know what came out of that workout.
Reportedly worked out for the Patriots, a guy that everybody thought that they were going to target late in last year's draft. I think he was on injured reserve for the Ravens a little bit this year, hasn't played an NFL game, but
yeah,
Mac Jones' old roommate.
Checks all the Patriots slot receiver boxes except being good.
Yeah, he had a really rough work at the combine last year. So
yeah
we'll, but anyway, continue.
Yeah. So I, you know, the big one was T. Higgins. The Bengals GM sort of kind of shutting that down and saying the trade chatter is ridiculous. I'm not in the business of making other teams better. If another team wants a receiver, they can go get their own. And that's all well and good. You can talk a big game. But at the end of the day, and the reason why so many people are talking about a T. Higgins trade is because, you know, you have to extend Joe Burrow. I don't care how team-friendly of a contract he takes. It's going to get paid a lot of money. Got to pay Ja'Marr Chase. You've got to do a lot of other things to the roster, offensive line, make sure the defense is in good shape, you know, to keep the Bengals as a consistent winner. Do they really have the money to pay enormous contracts to two receivers and a quarterback?
Yeah.
Maybe. A lot of people don't see it. So, you know, it was interesting that he was so, you know, forceful in shutting it down, but I still think it makes a lot of sense for there to be a T. Higgins trade. Would the Patriots make sense? I don't know, because you got to trade a lot of assets and then probably give them a huge contract. That's not what they typically do. So I don't know. I think an interesting one for me is Jerry Jeudy, someone who reportedly was available before the deadline. And according to Ian Rappaport, didn't generate a ton of interest, which was interesting. Former first round pick out of Alabama and hasn't really lived up to that hype, but he also has had at least, I think, 800 yards or around that. I think 900 something yards this year in all three seasons while playing for a bad offense. And he's only 23 years old. He's quick. He's a good route runner. I think he'd be a big upgrade for the Patriots. And so you'd think, given that he was available before the deadline, could he be available this offseason? Because the deadline to pick up his fifth-year option is in May. If they decline that, that would seemingly open the door for a trade. However, with Sean Payton now as the head coach, we don't really know where they stand on that. The Broncos GM said we're happy with Jerry Jeudy, but didn't really say much beyond that. So that's an interesting name. You mentioned Keenan Allen. And then, you know, I think this storyline isn't going to go away. We're going to talk about Patriots and star receivers all offseason because I think it's clear that they need one. But it's I have no idea where it's going to go at this point. I don't think they're going to use the 14th pick on one, though. That would surprise me. It would be cool for our purposes as a job. I think Zay Flowers is someone who would make a lot of sense, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, it seems like there are kind of two groups with those trade candidate wide receivers too. There's the older aging veterans and the Keenan Allens and Hopkins and Brandon Cooks, and then there's the Jeudy and Higgins camp that are still younger guys still on their rookie deals. As we mentioned, it doesn't sound like Higgins is going to be moved, but Jeudy is a guy who could probably be pried away for one less trade compensation than Higgins just because he hasn't proven to be the same caliber receiver at the NFL level. And you'd imagine that his contract would probably be a little bit more manageable than the one that Higgins is eventually going to get if he continues doing what he's going to do. So,
and I'm not big on a Brandon Cooks trade. Like we've seen that. We know what that is. I mean, he's a good player, but I don't know. I wasn't that impressed when he was with the Patriots. I don't know if the Patriots were all that impressed with him given that they moved him. But we'll see.
It was a weird year when he was here because if you look at his stats, he was a 1,000-yard receiver. He was extremely productive for that 2017 Patriots. But you look back and you're like, that was kind of a disappointing year for Brandon Cooks. He was just a weird player for the Patriots offense, I guess. But he's also a guy that pretty much gets traded once every 4 months. So you can never rule that out with him. What else do we've got? Anything else? Actually, no. Well, we can close out here if we don't have anything else wideout related. I thought it was really interesting, this NFLPA survey that came out yesterday. Basically, the NFLPA, the NFL Players Association, they polled, I believe it was 1,300 NFL players about their own team, basically about how good the amenities and overall player experience, not talking about anything coaching or on-field related. This is all kind of behind the scenes player welfare type stuff. And they asked them to grade their own team in 8 different categories. The Patriots graded 24th out of the 32 teams, and they graded pretty poorly in most of these categories. I'll run through them right now for you. Treatment of families, they graded out as a C-. That was tied for 22nd in the league. Food service/nutrition, actually pretty good. They got a B, that was 12th. Weight room D, that was 31st. Strength coaches is interesting. They gave that unit a B+, but that was the 28th best in the NFL. Almost.
Which I think tells you, like, what does this list really mean? What's the difference between a B+ and an A-, and you're 28th instead of third?
You would imagine. You know? Basically, everybody except for the Baltimore Ravens had a reasonably good grade for their strength coaches. Training room C-, tied for 22nd. Locker or training staff A, tied for 9th. Locker room C+, tied for 18th. And team travel, which I think was the one that most people took away from this, D+, tied for 25th, despite the fact that the Patriots have their own private team-owned 767 jet that
bigger
they fly
seats
on.
Than the original seats that were in it, right?
Yes, it's basically an old Delta plane that they stripped out all the seats, put in essentially first class seats all through the plane. But that was certainly the one that
the aircraft
with K, yeah, that popped out to Patriots fans saying, "Doesn't I got texts from multiple of my friends saying, doesn't this team own their own plane and fly private everywhere? How do they get a D+ in travel?" I think you can look at some of this as, and I'm sure some fans will look at some of this as being like, all right, you're flying on a private plane, just stop complaining kind of thing. You got it pretty good compared to most people.
I might land in that category too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of first world problem stuff going on in this list. Not all of it, but some of it.
I think when you read some of the entries from some teams, there is some pretty crappy
Cardinals.
Stuff going on. Yeah, the Cardinals, there's some bad ones.
Players pay for meals,
yeah,
right?
Pay for meals. There was a team that said they made players' girlfriends like nurse their babies on a bathroom floor. Like there was some really weird stuff. I think
the Patriots don't have one of the teams without a daycare facility, right?
Yeah,
that's one of the knocks for their treatment of families.
Yeah, and the Ravens really hate their strength coach and their training staff. It seems a lot of players have sounded off on that,
including Matthew Judon and Carl Davis. Today.
Matthew Judon, Carl Davis, Quincy Adebayo, who used to play for the Patriots as well. It's basically been a chorus of Baltimore players. That's something that I didn't realize was an issue, but apparently it's a very big issue in Baltimore. But overall, I don't think this is going to be results that Robert Kraft is going to be particularly happy about, especially because there was, I can't remember the exact figure, but it was close to 50% of the Patriots players, according to the survey, don't believe Robert Kraft spends enough on player welfare, essentially invests enough in the facilities and staff, whatnot, which is also a little strange given that the Patriots had a gigantic $250 million renovation coming this year that will mostly be fan focused, but I do think they are putting in some new player amenities. I know they're getting a new weight room. They're getting, I believe, some new training space as well. But yeah, it was just a little jarring to see where the Patriots and Robert Kraft ranked on here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the timing of it is tough too. I mean, there's a survey that comes out that basically says Gillette Stadium stinks. Like it's more or less like Gillette stinks. And meanwhile, the Krafts, like you said, are spending like $250 million on making it better. So that's tough, right? Because very soon the stadium could be much better than it currently is. And as you mentioned, it could have it's going to have a new weight room that surely will be very nice. And so, yeah, I imagine that's got to bother him a little bit. That's the image being painted of his facility, you know, the main building for his franchise, and it kind of is getting mocked. And then same thing with the planes. Like, they buy the two planes, put all the Patriots logos and the 6-time Super Bowl champions. They look cool if you want to see it. You want to see it in person. You can go to TF Green Airport in Providence. It's sitting right out there on the right. You can see it from the highway.
And the player's like, nah, D+.
Yeah.
This is a D+ plane.
D+, which is a very first world complaint. You know, as someone who's 6'4" and deals with like Spirit Airlines accommodations, like, okay. But yeah, I mean, it's not terrible. They don't come out terrible in this, because especially when you're comparing them to the Cardinals and some of these other teams,
and there's,
how bad they look.
There's but for each team, they kind of did a little like bullet point breakdown. And when you read the Patriots one, there's nothing that you say, oh my God, like that is bad. Like we were saying, there are some of those for other teams. Patriots came out pretty clean in that regard. And overall, this was probably a smart idea by the Players
Great
Association,
idea.
Whoever came up with this.
Good way to build competition to the franchises to be better.
Yeah, to say, I mean, they're going to be NFL owners who are going to say, well, I don't want to rank 27th or 28th on this list. I'm going to go out and spend on a new training staff, get a new weight room, kind of increase the amenities here. So,
well, look at it this way. The Minnesota Vikings finished first overall, and they had at least an A- in every single category. They only had one A-. The rest were all A's or A+. And, you know, maybe there will be a free agent out there, especially maybe a younger guy that looks at that and goes, I want to go there.
Yeah, and that's in Minnesota, too.
In Minnesota.
That's basically an entire roster saying that they love playing in Minnesota.
Yeah, and the NFL doesn't seem to deal with as many of the issues that maybe the league like the NBA does, where a lot of players are like, I want to go to Miami.
Yeah.
Because it's nice. I want to go to LA. Like, I want to be around the stars. You get a lot of that in the NBA. I'm sure some of it happens in the NFL to some extent, but, you know, guys, if the money's there, if they feel comfortable, they'll go to a place like Minnesota. And so having them look so good in a survey like this definitely helps them. So I imagine the Patriots will look at this and go, okay, we want to improve in these areas because we want to be near the top. in the next survey.
Yeah, it's only natural. If you're a free agent, you're kind of weighing two relatively similar teams, kind of similar rosters, similar championship aspirations. And you say, well, this team ranks second and this team ranks 28th. Maybe I'm going to go to the one where me and my family might be a little bit more comfortable.
Right. Also, could poke holes in the survey. I mean, I believe the Bills facility ranked higher.
The Bills overall ranked a little bit higher than the Patriots.
Yeah, and maybe some of those things, but like, I'm sorry, that stadium, no, it's not nice. So
your hatred of that stadium is one of my favorite storylines. I like it.
It was really bad. I was shocked when I went to it. I could not believe that an NFL team, let alone like one of the very, very best NFL teams played there, but they're getting a new one, so yep. I guess it doesn't matter.
Should change in a couple of years. I think that will do it for this week's Ness and Patriots podcast, which again is happening at the NFL Scouting Combine. Still plenty of combine happenings to occur in these next couple of days.
Receivers,
tight ends, quarterbacks tomorrow, running backs as well, then offensive linemen on Saturday. We still got to watch almost all the prospects actually do their drills, so there'll be plenty to take away from those in the next couple of weeks. And I'm sure on our next episode of the Ness and Patriots podcast, whenever that is, we'll be breaking down everything else that has yet to happen here in Indianapolis. But thank you all for joining us, and we will talk to you next time.